So let's read together Ecclesiastes 7. He starts out, he says, a good name is better than precious ointment, the day of death, better than the day of one's birth. It's better to go to the house of mourning than to the house of feasting. For this is the end of all mankind. The living will lay it to heart. Sorrow is better than laughter. For by sadness, of face, the heart is made glad. The heart of the wise is in the house of mourning, but the heart of fools is in the house of mirth. Better for a man to hear the rebuke of the wise than to hear the song of fools. For as the crackling of thorns under a pot, so is the laughter of fools. This also is vanity. There's that vanity keeps coming in. Surely oppression drives the wise to madness, and bribe corrupts the heart. Better is the end of the thing than its beginning. The patient in spirit is better than the proud in spirit. Be not quick in your spirit to become angry, for anger lodges in the heart of fools. Say not, why were the former days better than these? For it is not wisdom, it is not from wisdom that you ask this. Wisdom is good with an inheritance and an advantage to all who see the sun. The protection of wisdom is like the protection of money. The advantage of knowledge is that wisdom preserves the life of him who has it. Consider the work of God. Who can make straight what he has made crooked? In the day of prosperity, be joyful. In the day of adversity, consider. God has made the one as well as the other, so that man may not find out anything that will be after him. In my vain life, I've seen everything. There's a righteous man who perishes in his righteousness. There's a wicked man who prolongs his life in his evil doing. Be not overly righteous. Do not make yourself too wise. Why should you destroy yourself? Be not overly wicked, neither be a fool. Why should you die before your time? It's good that you should take hold of this, and from that withhold not your hand. For the one who fears God shall come out from both of them. Wisdom gives strength to the wise man more than any rulers who are in a city. Surely there is not a righteous man on earth who does good and never sins. Do not take to heart all the things people say, lest you hear your servant cursing you. The heart knows that many times you yourself have cursed others. All this I've tested by wisdom. I said, I will be wise, but it's far from me. That which has been is far off and deep, very deep. Who can find it out? I turn my heart to know and to search out and see wisdom in the scheme of things, and to know the wickedness of folly and the foolishness that is madness. Find something more bitter than death. A woman whose heart is snares and nets, whose hands are fetters. He who pleases God escapes her, but the sinner is taken by her. Behold, this is what I found, says the preacher, while adding one thing to another to find a scheme of things which my soul had taught repeatedly, but I have not found. One man among a thousand I found, but a woman among all those I have not found. See, this alone I found, that God made man upright, but they sought out many schemes. Now, I said before that I really don't see the unifying theme in all of this, but it does seem to me that It's a discussion of some things that bear on this kind of overarching theme that we've had for the book of Ecclesiastes. He said, this is verse 25. I turned my heart to know, to search out, to seek wisdom in the scheme of things, to know the wickedness of folly and the foolishness that is madness. And he says, I failed to figure it out. A little bit earlier, he said, let's get back to this. Wisdom is good with an inheritance, an advantage to those who seek the sun. The protection of wisdom is like the protection of money. Now, let's go back for a minute. We talked about wealth. What did we conclude about wealth in terms of insulating us from this problem that we've observed? The righteous suffer, the wicked prosper. Is wealth going to be able to insulate us from that happening to us? Anybody? It won't. Wealth is not the answer. You can have wealth, and wealth is good. Wealth allows you to do things. Wealth, though, creates its own problems, and wealth is not going to answer or not going to insulate you from the wicked prospering and the righteous suffering. It just won't do that. But that's not to argue that money itself is evil. It's not. It gives you the opportunity to help other people. We talked about that last week. Wealth gives us the ability to be of service. And there were very wealthy people who have existed all throughout time. Job, Abraham, Noah, we read about all kinds of wealthy people who used their wealth in the service of God, and that's the way that it should be. Wealth is not going to insulate. Even if you were wealthy like Job, you still might encounter that situation where a righteous man suffers. Job suffered. Job had all kinds of wealth. Yeah, Bob.
We're not necessarily talking about wealth here in verse 12. It says, like the protection of money. We all need money, even if it's just a little bit, you know, we need it to survive. Wealth is a totally different thing.
Okay, that's a good point. I should have said money.
So even a little bit of wisdom is useful for us.
Sure.
The more we have, the better, which is different from wealth.
Okay. That's a good point. So what does at least a little bit of wisdom do for us that's good?
It keeps us out of a whole lot of trouble.
Well, that's true. That's true. Yeah, Carol.
It preserves the life in him who has it. I mean, a person I knew somebody in high school who laughed about the fact that she had a lead foot. She died by the time she was 21 in a car accident. I mean, you know, being foolish and not even having that little bit of wisdom to pay attention.
Yeah, wisdom has some good effects. Don't ever discount wisdom. Don't discount having money. Okay, you need money to survive, at least in our country. I suppose if we lived the existence of a subsistence farm, money wouldn't mean anything to us. But we don't live that way. Most of us operate on the basis of money. I have money that I trade for the goods that I need. Okay? Money is not inherently evil. There's protection that comes from it, like God said. There's a protection that comes from money. I mean, I'd starve if I didn't have money. Most of us would. Okay? But it's not going to be. Seeking protection from the observation is not going to come from money. It's not going to come from wisdom. It's not going to come from honor. It's not going to come from having a lot of friends. That's just the way it is. So I've kind of organized all of this into sections. And as I was putting it on the slide, I decided what I would do is pick a part of the passage that in my mind kind of hangs together, and that would be the slide. So what you notice is, as we're going through here, some of the slides have four passages, or four verses, some have five. A couple of them only have two. But I did that so that I could at least try to organize this the way I was thinking. And he asked, in our discussion questions, he asked a question. He said, why is the day of death better than the day of one's birth? How is that possible? Anybody? At home? Anybody? Yeah, Carol.
If you're reaping your reward and you're going to heaven, you're going to be with Jesus, or you're going to be with God, then it is better because you're not going to have a whole life ahead of you that's perfect.
Okay. Twice. Death.
He had touched on this a few times in previous chapters where he talked about the travails that we face in life, and that for many people, it'd be easier to be dead than to be alive, than to have to face all the trials they have to go through on a daily basis. And whether that's what he's getting at here, I'm not sure. But the day of your death takes all of that pressure off.
Yep.
You're done.
Well, that's undeniably true. You know, In some respects, death is a welcome release from having to deal with the difficulties that we deal with in this life. Okay? And I suppose that most of us don't think of it that way because this life is not terribly bad yet.
Or economy? Okay.
You have to speak up.
Oh, okay. So when I look at these first four verses, I think about the fact, you know, when someone is born, there's happiness and rejoicing, and everybody's first little baby has come to the world. On the day that you die, there's usually suffering and pain associated with that physical departure. Maybe not always, but I mean, sometimes you hear about someone who just passes in their sleep, and we don't know if pain is associated with that or not, physical pain. But I'm always happy when I hear that a Christian has passed in their sleep like that. I'm very happy for them. Because most of the time, that separation from our body is associated with some travails. And I think what these verses are saying is that you learn more when you're going through hard times, when you're going through difficulty, that it's better for you. You will grow more. You will become more wise than during happy times.
Okay.
The happy times in life, the lessons aren't as great. I think there are lessons in them, but they're generally not as great as the times of difficulty. And I think that's what he's saying, is in order to become more wise, we need to appreciate the time that we're in the house of mourning, the time that we are you know, looking at the end of life. Any of us who have gone through the death of a loved one, later you can look back on that and look at all of the incredible, valuable lessons that you learned. You know, my dad was a very spiritual man, and some of the things that he said to me at the end of his life are things that I hope I remember forever. These are nuggets that I of wisdom that I can take with me. And so anyway, I think that that's the point of these verses, is that you learn more when you're going through hardships than when you're going through the happy times.
Yeah, and you know, to kind of reinforce what you're saying, he said, it's better to go to the house of mourning, not necessarily saying it's better for you to die, but going to the house of mourning kind of impresses some things on you, you know. I remember when I was in high school and they were trying to get us to not drink and drive. And they showed some of the most sobering movies, just these horrific crashes. And you know, sometimes we have to know that. We have to make that a part of our thought process, or we'll go through life thinking I'm bulletproof. I can do anything I want to do. It's not going to affect me. And it will. So going to the house of mourning sometimes is a good thing. Yeah, Carol.
Well, and house of mourning, most of the time you have a person's life being celebrated or talked about, and times the trial and whatever. What it does is, to a wise person, it makes them sit back and ask the same questions about themselves. What am I doing? What should I be doing different? So from the standpoint that it makes you, it can make you a stronger person and a better person for knowing this person and evaluating them in your life.
Yeah, and even when sickness happens to me, when it's personal, reflecting on the fact of sickness, the fact of distress, helps us. Okay. So then he says, he talks about oppression and the wise man. This is verse 7. Oppression drives the wise into madness. And I think everybody knows that this came from the English Standard Version. So it's a little easier to understand some of these words when you see it in modern English. King James makes these things a little hard to understand. Oppression drives the wise into madness. How does that happen? What about oppression drives a man to madness?
Because it's so unfair.
Okay.
That's the way the person oppressed is feeling.
Okay. Dean?
Well, I'm reading out of the New King James Version in verse 7. For me, this is easier. Surely oppression destroys a wise man's reason. So if I'm wise in my own mind, if I'm wise in all of your minds, and everybody looks to me and Dean's got all the answers, well, that's easy to have all the answers and to look like you're doing fine when there's no problems. It's when the troubles of life and depression comes that the true you really shows up. And then you find out you don't have all the answers. You can't solve all the problems. So I think that it's just that. I mean, I like the way that verse is written, but for me, it just makes more sense that, you know, we look to you, we're like, Dean's wise. Not this Dean, that Dean. Dean's wise. But yet, if all kinds of troubles fall on the church and fall on you and you completely fall apart, that sets us back and it sets you way back.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Kim.
I read this verse a little bit differently. My version, I'm using the New International Version. Extortion turns a wise man into a fool, and a bribe corrupts the heart. And I took that to mean that the wise man becomes the person committing the extortion. And so that it turns you into, you might have started out as a wise person, but once you get involved in bribery and extortion, you become the fool and your heart is corrupted.
Okay.
So I kind of read it that way.
Okay. There's a lot of value in reading it from these different translations because we see a lot of different things here. And I like that translation as well. I think when you ponder oppression, if you think about it too much, it will drive you mad. And I tend to think of it like Bob was saying. If you focus on the unfairness of it, it is unfair. And the fact that it's unfair can cause you to just drown in despair. It can paralyze you too. Yeah, Bob?
Extortion and oppression are two different things. I see how extortion connects with bribery, but how can extortion and oppression just be flipped like that and used in the same verse and mean the same thing?
Yeah, I have to say I kept looking for some underlying theme that I could use to relate all these different parts, and I couldn't find it. I don't know what it is.
No, I'm talking about the translation. It doesn't seem proper that extortion, oppression, which are totally different in meaning. I can see how extortion might lead to madness and the bribery, corruption, but
I'm not sure. Yeah.
The word, the Greek word is injury, fraud, distress, extortion, oppression. So you have to understand that word covers a whole range of ideas.
Yeah. Jenny.
Well, if you look at his writing as a literary device, that he's taking two similar things and comparing them frequently. And what he's saying in this like list of all of these things is that the world in conventional wisdom sees one thing as beneficial, the truth is the other. And that's literary device of taking that dichotomy, those two things, and kind of saying that the reverse is more valuable, or the reverse is more true.
Yeah, the literary devices that the Hebrews used, that the writer of this might have used, it's not like the literary devices that I'm familiar with.
That each one is connected. So extortion is connected to bribery.
That's true.
So each of those two things that come in the pairs are connected to each other.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Let's go on a little bit. Then he says in verse 10, don't cry for the good old days. He says, it is not for wisdom that you ask this. Why are the good old days better than what we have? And the Jews went through this. Remember when they rebuilt the temple after it had been destroyed by the Babylonians? The people who had seen the first temple looked at the second temple and said, this is the temple, you know, it was kind of like, I wish we had the first temple. That was a real temple. This is just a poor imitation. And, you know, I think we have a tendency to do that in our own lives. To always think that the good old days were great. You know, if we just didn't have cell phones, we wouldn't be so busy. Right? Wrong. We were busier. But before we had cell phones, I had to make 4 trips to the grocery store so that Kim could cook Thanksgiving dinner. Now I make 1 trip, and before I come home, I call her to see if there's anything else that she forgot to tell me to get. You know, we think, hey, the good old days were great. We didn't have all this, it's this stuff. And I think as I've gotten older, the good old days hold a lot more fondness for me.
Yeah.
You know, if you're Nolan's age, the good old days was before you could drive a car. Okay. And I don't know anybody that says, well, I wish I didn't have a car. I wish I couldn't drive. Wouldn't it be great to live when life was slower and we got around in horse-drawn carts? Yeah, Carol.
Well, for me, I sort of see that former days, when you're focusing your life on former days, you can't change anything about that. You're not active. And I think the wisdom is you have a life now. You need to be doing things with this life, looking back on the other, whether it was good or bad. Is it going to change what you have to do today? So there's no wisdom in focusing in the rearview mirror instead of out of the windshield.
Okay, good point. Good point. You know, we decry the fact that now we spend all our money on gadgets. And wouldn't it be nice if we didn't have all those gadgets to spend money on? Yeah, but then you had to pick up the rugs and take them outside and beat them with a stick and try to clean the house that way. You couldn't just whip out the vacuum cleaner. I mean, I've got a cordless stick back. And I whip that sucker, well, Kim whips that sucker out. And Tilly runs and tries to hide. But I can do all of that. And I guess just understand, like Carol was saying, focus on what's coming. And it's not easy to focus on what's coming. And sometimes long for the days when, you know, people would get together on Sunday morning and then they stayed together all afternoon and they ate lunch on the grounds and then they would meet again and they could have more discussion and they could sing some more. Wasn't that great? Yeah, it was great. But what made that happen was you had to walk to get to church. Now, if anybody wants to walk here in the rain, you're more than welcome to walk here in the rain. And once you get here, you're probably not going to want to walk home. You're going to want to stay a while. Okay. So it's kind of understanding all of the advantages that we have. You know, now we can communicate with people via email, and it's instantaneous. Well, not quite instantaneous, but it's almost as good as instantaneous. And Brittany can communicate with Matt, even though he's half a world apart, half a world away. So let's understand the value in this, kind of use it to our best advantage. Then he says, he makes this statement that just really floors me. He says, well, let me back up. Let me find it again. I had it. Okay, where did it go? There it is. This one gets me. Don't be overly righteous. Don't be overly wicked. Does that mean you can be a little bit wicked? As long as you don't, yeah, you can be a little wicked. Just don't go overboard with it. You can be a little bit righteous, just don't go overboard with it. Help me understand this. What on earth is he talking about? Yeah, Jenny.
Verse 18.
Yeah, 16 and 17.
No, verse 18 is the end of that. It is good to grasp one and not let go of the other. Whoever fears God will avoid all extremes.
Okay. So how does that relate to being overly righteous?
I think he just talked about he has seen in his vain life people who have perished by their righteousness. And he's seen people in his vain life who have perished by their foolishness. And so, you know, people who fear God don't need to go to the extremes.
Okay. Kim?
I kind of took that to mean, I've always understood this to mean, kind of what Jenny said, is that those extremes and that overly righteous. Over righteousness is how my version reads, is taking a righteous stance at righteousness and then almost taking it to the extreme of being legalistic and being oppressive with it and taking it so far that you're no longer being a righteous person, but you're being a legalistic person. And then the other way with the foolishness is not to be overly wicked. I mean, the wickedness, not to be overly wicked, because again, it's even more foolhardy to be overly wicked. It's foolhardy for sure, foolhardy to be wicked. And you don't see any wisdom in that. But to be overly wicked, it's so foolhardy that you're going to be living in extremes. And like Jenny said, the writer has said, I've seen people perish because of others.
Okay. Yeah, Bob?
Well, as a human being, if you're overly righteous and you've made yourself too wise, who have you been depending upon? Who do you think you are? All that in a bag of chips? So you can destroy yourself by thinking, don't really need God because you're already.
Yeah. It's Margaret.
I agree with Bob, and I think the thing about all of these statements is that the good brings you closer to God, and the bad doesn't.
Okay. Yeah, Carol.
Well, just that on the wickedness, a person who is wicked and is a fool is going to die before their time in that wickedness, like somebody with the armed robbery or somebody who does that, and then they face the police, they know they're going to get killed, but in their foolishness and their wickedness, they're personified.
Okay. I hadn't thought of that. When I read this passage, I'll tell you, the guy that came to mind was the Pharisee in the temple who prayed to God. And he said, I tithe all that I possess. I am so righteous. And, you know, the Jews actually had a prayer that they would say every day. Jewish men pray, thank you that I'm not a woman. Don't understand that prayer, but that's what they pray. I think they wanted to be righteous in their own eyes. If you have the understanding that we've been talking about in Romans, that it's God's righteousness, it's not your righteousness. If you have that understanding, then you can't be overly righteous. Okay? Other thoughts? Comments? Anybody at home? I don't mean to ignore you at home. You just have to shout out because I can't see you when you raise your hand. Okay. Last thought. And maybe you can help me with this. Verses 27 through 30. I have no idea how to make sense of this. I found this while adding one thing to another to find the scheme of things, which my soul has sought repeatedly and I have not found. One man among a thousand I found, but a woman among all those I have not found. Anybody have any idea how to make sense out of that statement?
Well, I don't have too many wives.
And I'm not going to go there. Yeah, Jimmy?
No, except maybe for 26. This idea of the woman who is a snare and her heart is and his heart is a trap and her hands are chains. It reminds me of Proverbs when wisdom is personified as a woman. He's calling to, you know, but so is foolishness as a woman in the streets and calling to you. And then Solomon tells his son, avoid her completely. But then Solomon also personified wisdom as a woman. So
yeah.
I don't know that it's specific to women or to the one he's describing in 26.
Yeah, good thought. I just had a, anybody else have a thought how we can make sense out of this one? Anybody else struggle with this one? I came up with all kinds of things I can say and thought better of it.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll bring this class to an end today. Any further comments? Any other parts of this that anybody found particularly helpful, particularly thought-provoking?
Great comments. Thank you.
You're welcome. Now, we are going to talk about patience this morning, and I did find it interesting that the wise man talks about patience. He said, better to be patient than to be proud. So we'll talk a little bit more about patience in a few minutes.